Hi, and welcome to the 48th episode of the Autoblog Podcast. I'm John Neff.
And I'm Alex Nunez.
And we are here to bring you the latest and greatest automotive news that's happened in the past week. You may notice we are without Damon Lavrence today, and he had some other stuff to do, but hopefully he'll be back next week because we're not going to let him sit too many of these out. So, before we get started, though, I do want to give Volvo a chance to say a few words since they're the sponsors of the Autoblog Podcast.
The Volvo XC70 and XC90 deliver the ideal combination of versatility and comfort. They are both rugged and dependable, and come equipped with Volvo's advanced safety features. Visit www.volvocars.us for more information.
Okay, and the first piece of news we're going to get to is a bit of a surprise, or at least it was when it happened last week, which was Ford told its dealers that it would be delaying the delivery of the Edge crossover and the Lincoln MKX crossover. These two vehicles, which I think everyone knows, are supposed to be extremely important to the welfare of both Ford and Lincoln, have been delayed because of what Ford originally said was problems in the consistent delivery of some of the supplier parts and some problems in the actual production, the flow of production, I guess. But one thing that we did realize afterwards, it was in an article by Automotive News, I believe, was that it wasn't so much the rate at which these supplier parts were coming in. It was the actual quality of the supplier parts and that they weren't kind of up to spec. When we originally wrote the post, I commented that I thought it was a very good idea that Ford did not go ahead and push these two vehicles out into the market, having known that there could be problems or that some of these parts weren't up to a standard of quality they wanted. It's much better, in my opinion, long-term, to lose the 2 weeks of sales that they could have had and instead choosing to put out a better product that's going to, right from the get-go, have a good record of quality.
Yeah, I mean, in the long-term view of things, this 2 weeks is nothing. And if they had released it and there were quality problems in the beginning, it would have been just a disaster. So this is the smart play by Ford. No one is really going to miss this. The general, public is not probably even aware of this. So cars start appearing, people are just going to be, interested and probably, some shoppers, I'm sure, will be happy to see them. So.
And just to give a little background, Ford had originally said that it would be delivered to dealers mid to late November. Obviously, we're already there, past there. So now they're saying mid-December. So, they're probably going to lose a good number of sales, especially that strong kind of kickoff amount of sales, because they have been building up to this. I mean, they have the special Edge website, and they've done a lot of kind of grassroots marketing for it, making sure that the press is all aware of it and all that stuff. But I think if we look at the Fusion launch and how successful that was, how literally every Fusion that has come out of the factory has been of a higher quality than any Ford product ever. I mean, this car's had no official recalls whatsoever. Ford has actually gotten a lot of press just based on that fact, that
the Fusion
is a well-built car.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's like, I think this is one thing that domestics didn't realize was that, rather than just getting to market and trying to get a lot of ink off of selling a lot of cars, you can actually get ink off of building a good car.
And
people
that's
are actually
really good ink.
I mean, it's the best ink, man. You can't pay for that ink,
No,
I mean, you have to earn it.
No. And people pay attention to that,
Yeah, absolutely.
If it's on the evening news and, there's a thing about the J.D. Power quality ratings or whatever, talking about how great the new Fords are, well, people are going to pay attention.
Right. And quite frankly, I think Ford knows that it can't afford one mistake, especially in these vehicles that they themselves have pumped up as being almost like that Hail Mary pass they need to catch in the end zone. I don't think that's what these vehicles actually are, but they've been built up so much as being these savior vehicles. So one misstep on these and the problem Ford's in only compounds itself.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of the problems Ford finds itself, it also announced that on November 27th and 28th, which is literally right around the corner next week, it's going to have 2 days of sessions in which it will show all current employees and retirees its lineup extending all the way out to 2010. And this is taking place at Cobo Arena in Detroit, where and that's the place where Ford usually has its press conferences during auto shows. Now, having heard this, I quite frankly, I was extremely jealous of every Ford worker and retiree in the United States. I mean,
yeah, I mean, this is one that you want to be a fly on the wall for.
Oh my God! I mean, I think the real question I want to know is, I don't care that I'm not going to see.
They're going to see. Put it this way, and this is just talking about just one product that everybody always talks about. I mean, it's not even fair because Ford is more than just the Mustang. But these people are going to see two generations of Mustang, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're going to see the refreshed one that we're going to get in a year or two.
They're
going
to see the new one.
I mean, and the 2010 one. And I don't even want to – I'd be fine with not even seeing what these cars look like. I just want to know what they see. I want to know what's there.
I agree totally.
And I bet that's going to get out. I mean, there's no way they can keep that quiet.
No, that's – that will probably be on multiple websites.
And that's information in and of itself. I mean, even without seeing those, just to know that Ford is at a good place with the 2010 Mustang or that the Fairlane's looking good or, whatever.
Yeah, I can totally see Ford leaking the information also because, listen, this is the kind of thing you want people talking about because right now it's going to be all about GM for the next 2 to 3 years. And while Ford gets its act together, it's going to get, some people are going to pound on it probably unfairly because they obviously have a product in the pipeline. All companies do. They just can't show it.
You look at it this way. 2 or 3 years ago when GM wasn't really doing anything, it didn't have much to kind of shout from the rooftops about. That's when GM was in the boardrooms and in the design centers putting together its plan for what is literally going to come out in January at the Detroit Auto Show. I mean, 2007, 2008, and 2009 is shaping up to be an incredible series of years for GM because a plan is going into effect, a plan that was started a long time ago. And I think right now we're at that point for Ford when hopefully Ford is in the boardroom right now putting together that plan for 2009, 2010, when it can start rolling out these products that are killer. Because quite honestly, this financial doldrum it's in obviously caught it off guard. It didn't see this coming. So it's got to retrench, hope that the money holds out, which I'm sure it will. But they have to be working on that killer lineup. That killer lineup that GM's going to have.
If you don't have cool products, compelling product that people want to buy in your car company, you're screwed. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you do. You have to have stuff that people want to buy. So
in this room that these workers and retirees are going to be in when they see this, we already said they'll probably see at least one of the new Mustangs, if not both, the 2008 model and the 2010. They could see the next generation C1 based Focus, the Euro Focus that we've all been yearning for. They could also see the F-150.
I'm sure
the next one that
F-150.
Right, that's going to go up against the Tundra, which we really haven't even seen any spy shots on how it's going to change or be altered.
Well, if the Super Duty Ford is any indication, I have high expectations for the new F-150 because I think that Super Duty truck is pretty mean looking. So.
Yeah, indeed it is. Yeah, they're going to have the production version of the Fairlane probably. Hopefully, I think it's going to be awesome for the workers and retirees. What I think is sad is that from what we know about the Detroit Auto Show at this point, is there anything to get excited about that's coming from Ford?
Not that we know of, but Ford's been known to surprise before. I mean, Detroit is where if anybody's going to pull, a complete surprise move, it's going to happen.
It's going to be there. I think right now, though, what they don't need is a surprise move that's a concept that's not going to make it to production. Yeah. We don't need to see pie in the sky stuff. We need to see, lightly veiled concepts of what will be production vehicles in 2 to 3 years. And I know we go back to this like every third podcast, but and I think it was 2003. Was that when the 427 concept came out?
Early 2000. So.
Whenever the 427 concept came out, that should have been the year where Ford unveiled these concepts that were lately veiled versions of what its lineup, future lineup would be. But instead, they turned out to be pie-in-the-sky concepts. Like, they were just some designers, you know, fun tangent.
Unfortunately, yeah, that 427 concept, you know, it might as well have been the Ford 49 concept. Because
yeah.
You know.
That, I've argued this before, and that concept could have been the start of just an incredible 5 years at Ford. Like, if that had kicked off.
If that car was out now, it would be, you would see that car all over the place.
It would be, yeah. We'd be dealing with a completely different Ford.
Yeah.
But as we all know, that didn't happen, and we find ourselves here talking about what Ford may be 2 to 3 years from now.
And they're going to press the reset button, and I have to assume they're going to fix it. I mean, they know what they know. They should know what they need to do.
Yeah, you know, it's just, so. You know, being in the media and also reading as much news as we do, there's just so much PR flack around,
yeah.
You know? And I hate to see a company try to manipulate the public and, you know, kind of, you know, do a juke and show them, you know, this is what we're working on. It's going to be great. And, you know, and then when something actually comes out, you're disappointed. I'm really impressed by the Edge and the MKX. But there are other Ford products that came out this year that I wasn't with. So I think we're at a point with Ford where we're still dealing with a lot of old Ford and a little bit of new Ford. And we need a lot more new Ford. We need a lot more of the Edge and the Fusion. And a lot less of the 500 and, give me another example. I know
the old Focus.
The old Focus, yeah. And hopefully there's that transition going on. And you coined the phrase, I don't know, I forget what piece it was in, of the old GM versus the new GM. And there's a lot more new GM in all the products coming out of General Motors than there is old. And that's why it's working for them. So isn't it weird that we always pit Ford and GM against each other in these conversations? I don't know why we don't bring up other automakers. It just seems
we can let's bring up Chrysler
okay
before we get to GM, because we're going to get to them anyway during this podcast. But
uh-huh.
Let's talk about Chrysler and the two sketches that they released today of these are Detroit vehicles. No, these are LA vehicles.
These are LA vehicles. Yeah. Yeah. And so Chrysler released two concept sketches today. One was for Jeep, named the Trailhawk,
yep.
And the other was for Chrysler, the Chrysler Nassau. And basically, the Jeep Trailhawk, from what we can see, it's only a head-on shot of the concept, but from
what we can see... You know what it really reminds me of?
What's that?
Do you recall the Commander concept, the alternative fuel one? I think it was alternative fuel, the Commander concept. It was that white one. It was probably 5 or 6 years ago.
And it was a Jeep?
Yeah.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
What I'll do is I'll update the post with I'll put a note on the post and I'll update the Commander.
Okay, we might have a post on it if it was within the last 2 years.
I'll find it. I remember it. It's an older one, but
What was it? The Commander concept?
Yes.
You think I'd remember that? That's such an obvious name for a Jeep concept. Well, the image we get is pretty much a head-on shot, so I can't even really tell you if this is like a two-door or a four-door SUV concept that they're showing us. I assume it's a four-door because it's described as. Let me just read what the PR wordage is. It says it combines the core features of the Jeep Wrangler with the sophistication of the Jeep Grand Cherokee. So,
I'm thinking Grand Cherokee with big wheel flares and cooler new headlights.
And basically, yeah, that's what we're seeing. And a lot of people in the comments said, isn't that what the Liberty is supposed to be? Which is,
it's pretty funny.
Yeah, technically, yeah, it is. I'm not really sure what they're showing us, if this is something that's meant for production or just, some fun
concept. If it was
concept.
Meant for production, I wonder where they'd slot it, because they
exactly.
have a whole bunch
no
of
room.
Stuff right now.
Yeah, I mean, you go Compass, Patriot.
Patriot's not even out yet.
Yeah, Liberty, Grand Cherokee. I mean, that's a lot of...
And Commander.
And Commander above that. That's a lot of SUVs. And then,
yeah.
you go to the other company, the other brand in the fold, and you've got the Dodge Nitro out. You've got the Durango. I mean, seriously, talk about going overboard on the SUVs. I don't think you can claim that Ford was the one who went really nuts over SUVs and is addicted to SUVs. Chrysler is the one who's addicted to SUVs.
I can see. I understand it with Jeep. That's what their core competency is. Although the Compass kind of.
But even still, spreading the brand over like this. This would be like, let's see. You got the Compass, and that's okay. That's not an SUV.
That's a car. A
bastard stepchild is what it is. But the Patriot, when it comes out, the Liberty, the Grand Cherokee, the Commander. That's four SUVs plus the Compass.
I actually think the Patriot will do fine when it comes out.
I do too.
It looks like an old Cherokee, and that's a
good thing.
I personally love those old Cherokees, and I think there's a lot of appeal there. And
I do too. Yes, I do too.
I think the Compass is going to sit around as soon as the Patriot appears.
Patriot comes out. I really don't know why they need both. I mean,
it's kind of silly.
Yeah, exactly. Probably just to spread out
the also. I mean, it's too much of the same.
Well, they probably had to build the Compass to make the economies of scale for the Caliber, better. You have to build two to make it worth it.
Yeah.
Because car companies just don't think that they could sell 200,000 or 300,000 units of one vehicle anymore.
Right, but so then why not just come out with the Patriot? This is where I get a little lost. I don't know.
Well, the other concept sketch that was released by Daimler Chrysler, or the Chrysler Group, I should say, is the Chrysler Nassau. And again, this is a front shot, but we get a little view of the side, and it's supposedly a four-door coupe, much like the Mercedes-Benz CLS, what are all the coupes coming out? The Aston Martin Rapide, the Porsche Panamera. Yeah, all of these cars coming out that are four-door coupes, which I hate. They're not four-door coupes. They're sedans.
Get over it. The idea of the Mercedes-Benz CLS being called a coupe is so ridiculous.
It's a gorgeous car. I love the CLS.
It's one of my favorite cars, but it is not a coupe. It is a sedan.
It's a sedan. What's so bad about that?
Can we all get real here? Yeah.
It's a beautiful sedan. I mean, we'll qualify with that.
It might be the most beautiful one right now. So
what I like about the Nassau, though, is it looks like it's Chrysler's kind of second swing at a big luxury sedan.
Well, it's clearly a second swing at the front end that appeared on the
Imperial concept.
Without those awful headlights that look like those old vacuum-operated ones.
Right.
But that are stuck open, So here we have something that looks much nicer.
Well, and it looks like, I mean, if it is going to have the four-door coupe body style, then the profile and the greenhouse is going to be a lot different than the Imperial was. The Imperial was like, it was more slab-sided than the Chrysler 300. This looks much swoopier, and actually quite unlike, the Chrysler sedans we've been used to seeing for a few years. This looks gorgeous in the concept. I think it looks great. It has an uncluttered front end
Modern.
Yeah, it's the front end I wish the Sebring would have, really.
But that's a whole other topic.
We could do a whole podcast on what an ill-fated vehicle the Chrysler Sebring is. But no, I mean, this is the front end the Sebring should have. I mean,
it absolutely is. And this is a really good-looking, I mean, obviously we're talking about a sketch, but this is very good-looking. And concept cars always look cool because they have enormous wheels and, the ground clearance is like, centimeters and...
Well,
it's good. This is going to look. I'm sure this is going to look awesome next week when you guys go out there. So
in the marketing jargon for the Nassau, it does say that the design. I'm quoting again. The design leans toward an exploration as to what could be a future sedan in the brand's lineup.
Yeah,
so that's good. I love hearing that. I love hearing that
is
made.
Code for.
And you know what? If Chrysler says it, if Chrysler says it, that's code for it's already been approved. We have to see are like three people smile at it, and we'll build it.
This is in the pipeline. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically.
And that's a good thing. This looks like a nice car. And you know what? I like the Chrysler 300, but it is time for something different. So, and if this is the direction they're going to go, good for them
And, this happens in so many areas in life, not just in the automotive industry, where a company gets a hit and they just hold on to it too long.
Yeah.
It's like stick to your cycle. The Chrysler 300, when it gets 4 to 6 years old, switch it. Change it. Do something different.
And here's the thing. The Chrysler 300 is a great thing for Chrysler because it completely raised their profile.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody likes the Chrysler 300. And so when it goes away, people are going to expect something new, and this is about as different from that as you can get. If it's going to be as sleek as this looks,
I just don't want to see over the next 5 years, three mild refreshenings of the Chrysler 300. I hate refreshenings.
First of all, and Chrysler, by the way, does not do refresh as well. Look at the old Sebring. So you had the grill that was on the last one at the end. It was just, I mean, they put those ridiculous headlights and that awful, like, squarish grill. When it, you know, the previous one had the that nice wide egg crate grill, mm-hmm, that was low mounted, and then you just had the Chrysler wing badge, and then they got rid of it to create some sort of family resemblance by having the big round the big squarish grill, and they destroyed it.
Yeah, no, completely agreed. And you know, quite honestly, in my mind, a refreshening, if you refresh a car before its actual update or actual redesign is due, you're admitting you made a mistake. You're admitting you missed the mark.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, look, everybody does refreshes. Like, look at the TL refresh, and that's a mild refresh.
Yeah, but you look at – when you do look at them, like, okay, take the Honda Accord. You know, nobody faults Honda for anything. But they did a refresh on the Accord and gave it a new rear end. That was needed. That rear end was a mistake. They fixed it. You know, I mean,
the headlights got changed too. They changed the front too.
Right. You know, well, I mean, why you got the pen out? Might as well fix what else is broken. But you know, the Honda Accord still sold well while it had that really big ass. But that was something that needed to be corrected, and they went in and did it. So I guess I'm just saying that if you refresh, some people refresh a vehicle because it needs to be. Some people do it because they don't have the money to actually redesign the vehicle.
Right.
Those are the ones that hate the most.
I think with something like the 300, you'll see refresh, but I think it'll be more, you know, detail and interior type stuff.
Yeah. And those I don't mind when they come out with new wheels and new trim bits and different color combos.
You have to do something
to
keep, you know, to just make it somewhat, you know, more interesting. So.
Well, we also got another pre-release auto show picture today, and this one is actually really early because it is of a vehicle that will be debuted at the Detroit show in January, and it's the 2008 Chevy Malibu. Unfortunately, it's only the interior pick, not the exterior, which is what I'm really interested in, but it's still cool to see way ahead of time what the interior of the next Malibu is going to look like. And you have reviewed the Aura, or you are reviewing the Aura,
currently,
I should say.
Reviewing the Aura.
Right.
I promise, readers, it's coming.
It's coming. So you kind of have a better handle on kind of the new GM midsize interior that's being put in these Epsilon platformed cars.
Yeah, obviously this is on the same exact platform as the Aura, so it's got the same 112-inch wheelbase. And looking at the interior and comparing it to some of the pictures I took of the Aura that I had, there's obvious similarities. You know, the steering wheel, the center stack, switch gear, and everything are pretty much the same. Behind the shifter, that little storage area that's covered by that, there's a sliding plastic thing there. That's pretty much the same. But this is more upscale. The two-tone looks different. The way the gauge cluster is, even though it's got those cylindrical like tunnels that you look into for the gauges, those are different than what the Aura has. And the kind of Mustang-like twin pod setup for the interior is also different. And this also has the storage cubby on the top of the center stack, mm-hmm, which I think, we have a post going back sometime during the summer, which I think houses the iPod connection that GM is going to be introducing.
Right. You know, looking, well, I think the two-tone,
this has more detail all the way around than the Aura had.
I think, I personally really like the two-tone. And one thing they mentioned was that it was one color combination of many that would be available.
Yeah.
But they also said something really odd in the press release when they said that, here, let me find the quote, because a couple of commenters pointed it out. It says that the 2008 Chevy Malibu will offer a number of striking and progressive interiors. So, okay, what does that mean?
I think it means that just depending on the trim, I think there are going to be multiple trim levels because this one's going to have four cylinders available also, which the Saturn doesn't. Mm-hmm. The Saturn just has the 3.5 and the 3.6. And this year could probably have a selection of the Ecotec and the six cylinders.
Well, yeah, but not to fuel speculation, but Chevy is the one that has gone the farthest in differentiating interiors. When you look at the new Silverado, you can actually order the new Silverado with two completely different interiors, which is different than the F-150, which when Ford came out with the current generation of that, you could order it with two interiors that had, you know, extreme opposite trim levels, you know, like a total work truck and a, you know, pimped out luxury version.
Right.
But they were still the same interior. But the Silverado, you can get two different interiors. So I wonder if I wonder how these interiors are going to differ. If it, is it just going to be different color combinations? Because if so, then there was really no need to point that out and kind of get us wondering in the press release.
Obviously, this is a top of the line interior.
Yeah. I mean, the stitching on the leather looks awesome. You know,
even
it has
look
that...
at the center armrest. Looks like it's got leather.
And is
stitched. And the I'll tell you what, the Aura does not. Aura has that center armrest. The Aura does not have the leather on the covering it. So
it's the two the leather is two tone too. It's got kind of black inserts and this kind of burnt red inserts. The stitching is like a baseball glove stitch.
Yep.
The only thing that worries me about the interior that I'm seeing is it's two-tone. So we have kind of the top of the dash, this kind of black plastic. That looks okay in the picture. It's really hard to tell. But then there's also large swaths of this burnt sienna-colored plastic, I assume, and just really large expanses of it. And there are places in the interior where I see this reddish plastic.
It looks pretty
brownish. And it doesn't look like that would be a high quality surface. It doesn't look soft to the touch. It looks like that hard hollow plastic. So, I'm concerned about those pieces the most, because it's those pieces when you knock on it with your knuckle and you hear nothing behind it and you think cheap.
You think that's going to be a rattle in 2 years.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that all said, you know, we have to see it obviously in person.
Right.
But I know I completely understand where you're coming from, and I see this exact same thing that you're seeing. And readers, your listeners, you know, obviously we're talking about a photograph here, which makes for, you know, great radio. But the other thing that I thought I'd mention quickly before we finish up on the Malibu is that the way they differentiate the sort of twin pod look is they use aluminum trim or aluminum look trim. Most, you know, it's probably what it is that wraps around, you know, both sides, the driver and passenger side.
Yeah, it's almost like it's almost like a satin nickel.
Yeah, and you know what? It's really nice, and it's similar to what you're seeing on the new Cadillacs that are coming.
Yeah, and that material forms the background or the base for the center stack, and then it flows out on either side of the center stack and becomes the defining edge between the brownish red plastic and the black plastic. And you're right, it is a classy touch.
I know GM is taking Saturn up market, and the Aura is, you know, from in my experience, was a very nice car.
And you had a top of the line Aura, didn't you?
Yeah, I had an XR. The only thing my Aura didn't have that I was hoping to see, you know, and live with for, you know, a few days was that Morocco brown leather. Mine did not have that. But
not to take it off subject of this a little, but I'm looking at the shifter, and what transmission do these use? Do they have
this one has the 6-speed? See those shifter paddles on the steering wheel?
Oh no, I didn't, because I was wondering, because I didn't see it in the shifter gate.
Yeah, no, this one's the 6-speed.
Is that what the? I don't see them.
Yeah, that means if you look on the, this is great for the listeners.
Are they sitting right on the spoke though? They're not
If you look on the left side of the steering wheel, see that little button? Those are the upshift buttons, which you have to hit with your thumbs, and then to downshift, you pull the paddles, which is, I'm not really crazy about the way they have
that.
That's
weird. I like shifter paddles that come more out of the steering column than off the steering wheel.
It has those. That little button on the top is the top of it, and you have to use that to upshift, and you pull the paddle in the traditional manner to downshift.
Okay, that's just weird.
It is weird.
All right, knock for that. But overall, I agree. I knocked it a couple times, but we have to say this with every new GM product that comes out. Just wow. You know, five years ago, I would never have said that GM could have made this interior.
Yeah, and like I said, I was about to say, I had presumed that the way that they were upmarketing Saturn, you know, that the Aura would be positioned higher than the Malibu, but this interior blows
makes you question that, doesn't it?
Oh, I don't even think there's a question anymore. This is really nice.
Yeah, yeah.
And if this is what, you know, if this is what GM has in store for a lot of new products, it's going to be, they're going to have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Well, let's move on to another GM story, the one that's not as flattering. We learned this week that on January 1st of 2008, about half of OnStar's subscriber base is going to lose their service. Not because of necessarily something GM did itself, but there was a ruling by the Federal Communications Commission that on January 1st of 2008, any wireless cellular provider that was operating an analog network could turn it off. And basically it's called sunsetting. They're going to sunset analog networks in 2008 and, you know, operate all on digital networks. Well, OnStar came out in 1996, and for many years it was using an analog network provided by Verizon Wireless. So the hardware, the receiver and the transmitter in the car was analog based. And in 2002 is when this ruling by the FCC happened that said that in 2008 analog networks are going to be closed. The problem is this ruling happened in 2002, and GM continued to sell vehicles that had analog hardware.
Yeah.
Which I think was a huge mistake, and now they're going to hear a bit of an outcry since a large portion of their subscriber base, literally their OnStar is just going to stop working on January 1st of 2008.
And talk about a blunder, because OnStar is such a huge selling point for GM, and obviously it doesn't affect new buyers, but this is, you know, that's...
Well, just to give you an
idea... If I was one of the affected customers, I would be so irritated right about now.
Okay. Well, okay. Just to give you an idea of the breadth of this, any GM vehicle sold with OnStar after 2006 is okay. That has digital, that uses digital hardware. Ones sold between 2002 and, I guess, 2006... could be either analog only, could be digital ready, which means that it's analog, but it needs just a little upgrade. Yeah. And then some of them in that time could be digital too. So I guess what I see the problem is, I don't see that GM made a huge blunder.
Let's think back to 96 for a minute, you know, and think about what your cellular phone was at the time.
Well, I mean, all cellular phones were analog at the time. Yeah. The digital networks didn't have any coverage except the major metropolitan areas. And quite frankly, OnStar wasn't a selling point for people in major metropolitan areas.
Right. The whole thing was, hey, if you're in a remote area and you break down or whatever here.
Right.
You know,
I mean, that was a selling feature.
Here.
And analog networks were the only ones that reached out into those networks at the time. They were the only networks growing that much. So it made sense at the time to make them analog. The fact that GM didn't foresee the switch to digital, I think, was the biggest blunder. But when they lost, well, it wasn't them that lost the ruling, but when the ruling happened, I believe they probably went right to work switching them out and in the interim giving people these analog ones that are upgradable to digital. But you just can't tell your supplier base, you know, on Monday, oh, we need all digital now, sorry. You know, it's going to take a couple years to kind of filter out the old hardware and put in the new one. So, you know, the fact that there's a few years where between 2002 and 2006 where half of its vehicles have analog and half have digital doesn't surprise me. I agree. I would be totally pissed if I were
one of these
people too.
Yeah. You know what? This is just what happens, you know, as technology progresses, but it's still that it doesn't make it any less lousy for someone whose car is going to have no OnStar.
And considering you're talking about literally potentially half your subscriber base, I mean, OnStar is going to take a hit. It's going to take a big hit from this, and it's going to have to climb out of that hole now. So considering how big of a hit it is, you would think that they would have planned out something beforehand. You would have think they'd seen this coming.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, quite frankly,
find a way to retrofit. Come on.
Yeah. Well, you can. I guess do an very expensive upgrade to the analog only ones, but I don't think a lot of people are going to be in the mood to do that.
No.
But quite frankly, you know, I mean, everything's moving from analog to digital. You would have thought as soon as digital became available, GM would have wanted it. You know. Just for the fact alone that it's new technology and you don't want to be seen as, you know.
But think about, you know, at the time, what was the cost implication? There's all kinds of factors that it's so easy to you know, hindsight's 20/20 here. It's regardless, it sucks if you have a car whose OnStar is going to get, you know, hosed on January 1, 2008. But, you know, there are so many factors at play. It's easy to make GM into a pinata here because
I don't think they deserve it though.
No, they don't deserve it. But it sucks.
There are other industries too that are going to get nailed for this. ADT, the home security.
Yep.
Their alarms, I guess, or something, operate on analog hardware. I mean, so this is, you know, not isolated, and I guess there's appeals going to force these wireless carriers that have the analog networks to keep them open, at least, if not permanently, you know, longer, so that they can do a transition.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. You know, I have to say, I've never used OnStar in a car. I mean, I've never owned one that had it, and I've never had a media vehicle that had it turned on.
I tried. The Aura had it turned on.
Did it?
I tried it just to.
Did you talk with somebody?
No, I didn't talk with somebody. But I hit the button and it started prompting me on how to dial, you know, out and all that stuff. So
interesting. I just don't this may be weird, but I don't like talking to real people. I mean, I'd rather talk to a nav system.
I will try the OnStar. I have a few more GM cars coming in December, so I will try OnStar and incorporate that into the reviews of one of the cars.
If you try the OnStar and you talk to a real person, if you record it and get that person to say Autoblog, I'll give you a raise or something. I'll do something really cool if you get the OnStar person to say Autoblog.
Okay. I'll try and get the OnStar person to say Autoblog.
If we can get them to plug Autoblog, that would kick ass. That would go in the new podcast. That would be the opening to the new podcast.
How about if I do the podcast over the OnStar telephone connection?
I've always wanted to do a podcast in a car. That would be awesome. That would be so cool. I've just never figured out how to do it since we're all spread out by however many ways. But maybe OnStar is the key. We'll have to look into it. Let's see.
We have one last thing, I think, to cover.
Do we?
That would be the Giugiaro Mustang.
Yes, yes. You know, I meant to bring that up when we were talking about the Ford sneak preview for its workers, but this happened a while back. On MustangForums.com, we found a spy shot of a Giugiaro Mustang concept, which I had heard nothing about. I mean, I didn't know that this was in the works, but apparently there was a snippet somewhere in Ward's Auto that said the Italian design house, the famous Italian design house, was working on a Mustang concept of all vehicles. And this concept was caught at a gas station by a car enthusiast who just happened to be traveling Italy. For those who haven't seen the picture, there is probably an engineer or somebody who works for Giugiaro standing in front of the car, in between the camera and the car, with a very stern look on his face.
Stern look is what it's still see, I would say, 95% of what the photographer was trying to capture.
So. Right, right. So it's a rear three-quarter shot of the car. It's obviously a Mustang. I think there's no doubt. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And the real question that's been going around about this concept is, how much of it is the 2010 Mustang? I would
have to guess a whole lot of it based on those sketches that when there was that I forget which of the magazines had that that piece.
I think Road and Track or Motor Trend.
It was one of the two.
Yeah, had a forward-looking Mustang little article that had some design sketches. The guy who took the picture says the front actually looks like the new Camaro. Which I would believe based on the renderings that people have shown us of what the 2010 Mustang might look like.
Mm-hmm.
And because the front end has that kind of the hood that slopes down and kind of obscures the headlights a little bit. You know how the headlights are kind of tucked in?
Yep.
That's what the Camaro is, and I think that's what the next Mustang will have likely as well. What's really cool about the concept, though, what I think is cool, is that you could tell it's a Mustang, but it's obvious, like, no body panel is shared with the current Mustang.
No, yeah. It has it's thematically, obviously, a Mustang, but it's completely new, and it is not some sort of rehash of anything.
Do you think they've actually contracted Giugiaro to contribute to the design or to design itself the new Mustang. I mean, that'd be crazy.
That would be an interesting selling point.
Yeah. Exactly. I think it would be a selling point.
And it has this picture of the show car, which I think in the article you wrote that it's going to be at LA. So, you know, we'll know.
I did write that.
If that's the case, then well, there's
LA's
not a whole
be
lot
rocking, man. If that's there,
and I'm jealous that I'm actually jealous of you guys if this is going to be there. But the where the rear three quarter window normally is, mm-hmm. this has these integrated louvers that look so cool.
Yeah.
It's
the only thing I don't like are the rear taillights that are. Do you remember the Mercury Messenger concept?
Yes, I remember.
It reminds me. The rear taillights remind me of
I have a feeling that those are not what the taillights would look like on the final car. That's where it looks pretty concept-y, is those rear taillights and the integrated exhaust.
Yeah, integrated exhaust. No production car ever has.
First of all, no Mustang is going to have a hidden exhaust. What part of the whole thing is that? You want to see those nice big fat pipes.
Although, we already know it's a Mustang, but one tip off to support that is if you look at the license plate holder, that's obviously not a Euro license plate holder.
Yes,
that was
made
for
a
US
that's
one.
Right. And then it's got the round Mustang, fake gas cap in the middle also.
Yeah. I wish this guy had gotten a shot of the front. So it looks hot. I mean, if you haven't seen it, go on autoblog.com and do a search for Giugiaro. I'm not going to tell you how to spell that because I'd mess
and
it
if
up.
It's,
but...
And if this is going to be Ford's thing at L.A., Ford is smart because they will absolutely own L.A.
Yeah.
And they will have successfully shown off something really cool that likely has a future and will not get obscured by the complete festival of GM that Detroit is going to be.
Right. I don't think
assume that it would then go to Detroit.
It still cause a stir there. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll still cause a stir, but this is going to be the star of LA if this is really going to be there.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm getting excited for LA. I didn't even notice I wrote that. Yeah, all the comments on this are positive.
And you know what? That's the other thing is you can hammer Ford for having boring products and say that they don't know what they're doing and they have too many crossovers and what have you. At the end of the day, they always have the Mustang, which can just save their bacon.
Every time.
I mean, because they're going to drop this thing out there and this will be the only thing people talk about Ford, for a week or so.
Well, and hopefully there'll be a lot of things that we know absolutely nothing about there. That they do surprise us with. And let's hope they are lightly veiled production versions of something. I always say I want to believe in these companies, and I want them to do well. I mean, I'm a car enthusiast. I want all of them to
make
great
cars. Yeah,
that's
one of the misconceptions. That's one of the things that readers, if you were to read, you read the comments on some of the posts, and readers will, invariably say that we're anti this or pro that. And you know what? We just want everybody to have good stuff. And
we're pro everybody, man.
Yeah. I mean, we like cars. So, and of course we want to see Ford do well. There's no reason any of the American automakers shouldn't be able to do well. First of all, they all have the resources.
Well, that's a complicated statement because they are hampered by a lot of disadvantages. Some they bring on themselves and some they don't. But I think it might be more accurate to say that we know both of them have the ability to do well. We've seen it before. We know it's there. So despite whatever disadvantages they may face, we know they have the talent and we know they can do it, basically. So it just pains us when we see that they don't and we have to call them out on it.
I mean, they have track records. So, when they blow it on stuff, it's just annoying. And like you said, we call them.
Right. Right, and it does. It makes us mad when they blow it on stuff because it's insulting.
Because
not
it seems
just
so
the,
silly, why,
Why? Yeah, I guess for us and
it's
and
very easy to be us. I mean, we're
right.
Not
I mean,
these,
everything's and, obvious to us. I mean, of course we know how to save these companies. We
every so often,
about
I
every
try
week.
And put myself in the place of one of the people that's on one of the product teams that's worked on one of these vehicles that comes out that we just gets absolutely hammered by guys like us. Mm-hmm. And these people just sunk the last 5 years of their life into putting this thing out. And
have to tell you about this experience I had. That's just like that. I went to a pre-release media preview of some GM vehicles back in like 2003, and they had the then new Cavalier there, And they put the designer and the product planner and all these people who worked on it are standing around these vehicles, and I'm sitting in the front seat of the new Cobalt, and the designer or somebody in the product team asked me, so what do you think? In my head, like, honestly, I'm thinking, you know, this is better than the Cavalier, but it's nowhere near the best in the class. I mean,
yeah.
You've moved from fifth place to third at best. But it's like that's always the hard part is, like, you know, you know these guys just sunk 5 years of their life into it, and, you know, and this is the thing they were working on, and it's not their fault. It sucks. It's the bean counters and all that. But it's so hard to look them in the eye and say, sorry, it's not a hit, and it's not going to be, you know? Because everybody works hard. I mean,
and the thing is, you know, if it's not going to be a hit, I mean, you see this stuff and, you know, you can tell what's going to be, what's going to work and what's going to kind of.
Right. And, you know, but at the same time, just because it's not going to be a hit, I think every year that goes by, cars in general get better. Vehicles in general get better. I mean, we rarely have an Aztec on our hands anymore, or a Saturn Relay and the Buick Terraza. I mean, those vehicles are few and far between, although those both happen to be GM vehicles, but besides the point, I mean, most cars that come out today are all around good, you know? I mean, there are very few cars where if a relative or a friend came out to me and said, I'm getting that, would I say, oh, that's horrible. You shouldn't do that. That's a bad idea. You know, right. I mean, cars in general are good. It's just
some of
them.
Yeah, the complaints come down to issues of personal taste more than anything else.
Right. And, you know, some quality issues, but, you know, if those are all, in a sense, subjective as well, because you look at consumer report testing and J.D. Power and all of those testing procedures have flaws and biases too. I try, when people come to me and ask me, you know, should I buy this or that, I already know that they like one or the other and they just want validation from me. And, you know, so I try and tell them as many good things about the car as I can and make them aware of some of the negative things. But truly, do people come up to me and say, you know, oh, I really, really want, you know, a Saturn Relay. I think that'd be great. You know, I mean, there are way more good cars out there than bad. So that's fortunate, but it's still our job to kind of point out when they've strayed from what we know they can do or should have done. Wow, that was a huge tangent, and that took up like 10 minutes. So I think we should probably end the podcast soon. But before we do, I want to give Volvo another chance to say a few words.
The Volvo XC70 and XC90 deliver the ideal combination of versatility and comfort. They are both rugged and dependable, and come equipped with Volvo's advanced safety features. Visit www.volvocars.us for more information.
Okay, and we're going to end the show now, but before we do, we'll give you guys some internal house cleaning stuff. First of all, as I mentioned last week, we are planning on relaunching the Autoblog podcast on episode 50, which should come in a few weeks. It's going to be a good time, but we need a lot of ideas on what you want to see in the new podcast. So if you have any ideas on what you'd like the next Autoblog podcast to include or to sound like, please send them to abresearch@gmail.com. That's our email address. And just tell us what you want to see. Maybe you want interviews. Maybe you want call-ins, MP3 files, you know, played, questions asked. We're game for anything. So if there's something you want to see, let us know. And also, we always like to mention that we are continuing to do our Reader Ride of the Day post every single day. So if you have a car that's of any interest at all, for whatever reason, we'd love to see it. And all you have to do is go to our Autoblog Flickr pool. Just go to flickr.com and type in Autoblog and submit your ride there. Include some information on it so we have something to say, something to talk about. And then maybe you'll be chosen and maybe you'll win the Reader Ride of the Week poll. Aside from that, I think we are about ready to take off. Did I miss anything?
No, I think that pretty much covers everything.
I think that does too. So in that case, we will see everybody next week.
Yeah, and remember to stay tuned next week because John and Damon will be in L.A. covering the L.A. show live, bringing you guys all kinds of goodness from the
That's field. Right. That's right. It promises to be it's a good show. At least it's shaping up that way. So until then, everybody, have a good week.
Happy Thanksgiving, too, everybody.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving.